This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Albert Einstein, of course, is a household name today, but he wasn't always. But way back 100 years ago, he was in his mid-30s. He created his general theory of relativity, but that theory needed to be tested before anyone would really take it seriously. So in 1919, soon after the dust settled from the First World War, two scientific teams set out to take advantage of a unique astronomical phenomenon, a total solar eclipse, to put Einstein's theory to the test. And for the rest of the hour, we're going to be talking about another eclipse, the Great American Eclipse this year on August 21st. If you still need details on how to safely view it, stay with us. We'll fill in the blanks in a few minutes. But first, let's take a trip back to yesteryear, to 1919, to that most epic of eclipse experiments. And our guide is Carlo Rovelli. He's the author of Reality is Not What It Seems and Seven Brief Lessons on Physics. He's a theoretical physicist at Aix-Marseille University in France. He joins us from Skype. Welcome back, Carlo.
Hi, welcome. Thank you very much.
You're always welcome to join us. Please set the scene for us in terms of what Einstein was thinking about at that time back then.
You use the word epic. I think it's very appropriate here. It's one of the great stories of science, I think, this eclipses and the proof that Einstein was right in this prediction. Einstein was coming out from 10 years of major struggle, intellectual struggle, in which he was working mostly alone to build what we call today the theory of general relativity, basically our current understanding of space and time. And it was an immense struggle for him. 10 years earlier, he realized that some major step ahead was needed. And he and a few friends worked very hard with very little ground. So it was mostly a purely intellectual adventure. He came out in 1915 with his beautiful theory. But of course, this is science. You don't believe a theory, even if it is incredibly beautiful, unless you can prove it right. And the eclipses of 1919 was a moment in which, I would say, spectacularly, beautifully, it was proven right.
He actually proposed this experiment to look at the position of the stars during an eclipse and see if they had a different position during the night. I mean, the stars came out during the day, and he predicted that their path would be bent, the light from them, and they would appear in a different place in the sky, right?
Right. He had this idea pretty early when he was beginning to work on his theory, already in 1911, so at the sort of 10 years earlier, almost, at the beginning of his work on gravity. He had the idea that somehow light could be bent. Instead of moving straight, light could be attracted, because that was his thinking. Space gets curved by a star, and time is slowing down near the star. And there are two phenomena that make the light bend. At the very beginning, he had only one of the two in mind, the slowing of time. So because of the slowing time, he was thinking that light slows near the star, and because of that, it bends, a little bit like when we put a stick into the water, we see it bent, because light goes at different speed in the water and in air. So there was this bending. He computed this bending. Fortunately, nobody tested his first prediction because it was wrong. So the 1911 prediction by Einstein was wrong. Later he developed the theory. The theory came in its full glory in 1915. This is during the war, during the big war in Europe. He realized that there are these two phenomena. So because of that, the effect is actually double than what he computed first. And in 1915, he came out with his definite prediction. He said, if my theory is right, you look at the stars, when the sun is nearby. And of course, eclipses is only needed for taking away the glow of the sun. When the sun is up, we don't see the stars, but during an eclipse, we do see the stars. So in the moment in which there is an eclipse, we see the star, we can look at the stars near, just very, very near to the sun, and that was a prediction. We should find them not at the right position, moved a little bit away from the sun. It was quite spectacular, the prediction, because this is something that was never observed before, and it was coming out from a very long series of deductions on the nature of space, on the nature of time, sort of a 10-year struggle by this solitary. I mean, if there's a moment in which we can use the word genius, is this one.
And there were various expeditions when Einstein made that prediction back in 1911. There was an expedition that went out in 1914, got caught just as World War One was breaking out. The expedition was arrested.
And as you say,
it's lucky that they were not successful, because he had a mistake in his theory. And by 1919, he had corrected that mistake. And then another expedition went out, right?
Right. So it was lucky that the first one did not get to the end. In a sense, I mean, he didn't have the theory complete. It was just trying to guess what the theory would give, still having a preliminary version of it. And of course, if the measurement would have been different, he would have thought, well, there is something wrong.
Yeah.
And it would have been less convincing, even if we later had corrected it. This way, somehow, chance was on his side, because he could get to the end, do the full calculation, come out with a very precise number, 1.75 seconds of arc. So it's a very precise angle under which the star would move, and it worked.
He's also fortunate that in that famous 1919 expedition, he had probably the best astronomer in the world working for him, Sir Arthur Eddington, who went out to do the experiment.
Arthur Eddington was a British astronomer, certainly a spectacularly good experimentalist, but also a very good theoretician, and very rapidly he understood general relativity very well. It's not an easy theory. It took some time to many great minds to digest it. He understood it. He appreciated it. He got convinced that the theory could be right. It's a beautiful story, because we should remember that was just at the end of the big first European war, which was a massacre, was a tragedy, was an immense killing in Europe. The Europeans killed one another. I mean, of course, they would repeat it some years later in the Second World War. But that was a moment in which there was the hope that the war is over and is peace and we can live together. And this is an accomplishment of a German theoretician and a British experimenter of the opposite side of the big war, after years in which there was hate and violence and fury and despising one another. And now these two men on both sides collaborating intellectually and understanding one another could together accomplish this major step ahead in science. It's a beautiful story. The two men were both, and I don't think this is irrelevant in all this story, were both opposite to the war. Arthur Eddington in England was a consciousness objector. He did not want to join the army, and this created problems for him. And in Germany, in Berlin, Einstein had signed a manifesto against the war, again creating not small problems for him. But I think that's the way it works. Great minds stay away from this human folly of the war, and we're thinking higher. And they could understand one another, and from a distance, because they didn't meet before, they could collaborate. And the world was shocked by the result. It was an immense success. Very rapidly, the scientific community realized that there was a very strong element in favor of the theory. So Einstein became celebrated as a scientific hero. And it was a moment in which I think Europe, America, were thinking maybe we'll think about science and knowledge and beautiful things now, and not about wars. It didn't last long.
It made Einstein an overnight. He made like a rock star of his time.
Yeah.
It was all over the world. The news of it was splashed in newspapers.
All over the world. There are famous clips from the New York Times, from the London Times. I also looked at the Italian newspapers at the time in 1919, and it was immediately presented as an immense result. People were shocked because there is this title, stars are not at their place, space and time are not what we thought they were. The message that science is making a big revolution was out there and was well received by everybody in 1919.
Mm-hmm. And one thing a lot of the articles of the day seemed to mention was that this experiment also proved that space could have limits, that it could be a finite. If it's bending around itself, then maybe it could bend all the way around.
Yes, that's something that came out more or less at the same time, because Einstein was immediately trying to use his own theory to understand what could be the shape of the universe as a whole, and had this fantastic idea precisely in that moment that the universe could be, that there's a possibility that the universe is not infinite, it's finite, because it bends on itself. So if we could travel in a direction forever, we would come back here, having made the tour of the universe. It's an extremely beautiful idea that somehow closes infinity. We still don't know that one, if it is right or wrong. I personally think it's right, but I don't know. This is my guess. It's one of the open questions. You know, science is not about closing questions. It's about opening questions and opening possibilities. And the possibility of a finite universe, it's very interesting, I think. It's very intriguing.
Yeah, it's a great open topic. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Savannah, Georgia, one of my favorite cities. Omar, hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you for taking my call. I hope I'm posing this question correctly, but are the observations of as they pertain to general relativity the same, and the experience, so to speak, the same around a large gravity well versus a smaller gravity well, versus like the sun versus the moon, something like that? I hope I posed that correctly.
Yeah, I think you got it. Let's get Carlo. Thank you.
Yes, gravity is gravity, and the effect can be smaller or stronger or weaker depending on the mass, but it's exactly the same phenomenon. When they got very strong, we go to black holes. And let me put it this way. 1919 eclipses and Eddington observation was the first spectacular confirmation of Einstein theory. Since then, we have had a series of them, a lot. The expanding universe, the existence of black holes. And a couple of years ago, the gravitational waves produced by black holes is the same phenomenon, the same gravity described by the same equations, but it's a variety of different consequences, all predicted by the theory, and in this century, one after the other one, all verified. At the beginning, they all seemed crazy, and they turn out to be correct.
Let me remind everybody that this is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. I'm Ira Flatow, talking with Carlo Rovelli. One last question for you. If this was such a dynamic and life-changing scientific event, and the whole theory, both theories of relativity, why is it that Einstein never won the Nobel Prize for these? He won it for something he did earlier. How did this escape?
He won the Nobel Prize for the photoelectric effect, which has nothing to do with all that, something else. Seen from the eyes of today, Einstein could have deserved maybe four or five different Nobel Prizes. Certainly the one for the photoelectric effect he got, but also for special relativity and also for general relativity. These theories were very complex. And in spite of the spectacular prediction of 1919, the theory, it's a large, complicated theory. It took a long time before the entire community actually took it for established physics. Now it is so. And the Nobel Committee, I would say correctly so, it's very cautious. In a sense, it's not sufficient to explain something and to get one prediction right. It wants to see if the full theory works. So it waited. I think Nobel Prizes cannot be done to somebody after the person is dead. I think now there will be no doubt Einstein would deserve several Nobel Prizes.
Well, Carlo, you deserve a prize for your books. They're so great to read. Carlo Rovelli, author of Reality is Not What It Seems and Seven Brief Lessons in Physics. Dr. Rovelli is a theoretical physicist at the Aix-Marseille University in France. Always great to have you, Carlo. Thank you for staying up late.
Thank you. A pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much.
You're very, very welcome.